Sarah, I started a Substack last spring, just kind of as an experiment, and it turns out I love it. I'm treating it kind of like an old school blog, writing about things that are happening in my life.
Megan, I've loved following your stuff on Substack, and I actually just really like Substack in general.
You know, we've both been a lot less active on Instagram lately, and I'm finding that Substack scratches that itch to connect and create without all the busyness of a typical social media feed. So I would love it if Mom Hour listeners wanted to look me up there. I'm at meganfrancis.substack.com, and that's Megan with two A's, meganfrancis.substack.com.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis, joined as always by Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan.
Awesome. Sarah is going to, I guess, launch our topic today, which is something that I've actually gotten a lot of questions about on the Happiest Home blog, and have just not written about as much as I would like, and that is manners, specifically how we teach manners to our kids. What's important to us when it comes to manners? Like, what are manners in 2015? So, Sarah, take it away.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this, mostly because I know that it's a topic you've thought about. And I think at one point you were kind of thinking about writing a blog series about it. And then we got into like some other projects. So mostly I'm excited because I have no idea what you're going to say.
Oh, goodness.
And I'm just excited because I think it's a really good topic. And you haven't really written about it.
No, I haven't.
And so I'm going to mostly like put you on the hot seat. But
I'm sure
I'll find a few ways to weigh in myself. Okay. But also your kids are older than mine. So I think a lot of the things we're going to discuss, you'll just have a broader perspective on. Okay. So I'm going to dive in. So what do you think are some basic manners that you have done a good job of teaching your kids? Everything from the pleases and thank yous. Like, what are some things in your house, more specifically, that are sort of non-negotiables, whether the kid is 5 or 15?
Well, okay. So I want to back up really quick.
Yeah, I figured you would.
I'm going to take the broad view. You know how I am. The broad view here. Okay. So I just want to say, before I became a mom, I was totally convinced that I would be one of those parents who would raise like super polite kids. And when I say polite, I mean all the little niceties that I grew up with my mom teaching me. Like, we had to always, every time we got anything from a relative, even if it was handed to us in person, we said thank you at the time. We were then required to sit down at the table and write a thank you note. And I remember having my little stationery with these little bear stickers. And then I would, you know, write the letters and address the letters and put the little stationery sticker on it and address it and all that. I mean, like, I was very much a part of the process, all the way to table manners and things like that. And I don't want to say I fell down on the job, because I think my kids are still pretty polite. But there's just certain things that I feel like fell by the wayside. And I'm not sure if it's because we're living in a less formal time period than when my mom came of age. So what she passed down to me was maybe already getting a little antiquated by the 80s. You know, she became a mom in the 60s. And things changed a lot between the 60s and the 80s. And I'm not sure if it's just because nobody around me was doing those things or what. So, or maybe I just had too dang many kids. I don't know. So I will talk about the non-negotiables, but I also kind of want to talk about some of the things I don't do.
Yeah. No, I think we'll definitely get into that too, because I have some of those too.
Yeah. Okay. So the non-negotiables in our house, I guess, you know, I read someplace a few years ago, and I don't remember where this was, but I will try to dig it up. I will try for the show notes. I'm not sure that I can promise that. Is an article that sort of distinguished the difference between etiquette and manners.
Oh, okay.
And it's sort of point was that etiquette is like what you learn about in Emily Post. It's a it's a rule book. It's a it's quite intensely detailed at times. Hardly anyone I know actually knows all the rules or would follow them if they did.
Right.
And the point of this author was that manners are a different thing. Manners are a way of treating people.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I do too. And when I read it like that, I had never really thought about it, but when I read it in black and white like that, it made so much sense to me. So I would say the non-negotiables in our home that have to do with manners are the way we treat each other. And that means we ask, we don't demand things at each other. Even me, even though when I phrase something with a nice please and thank you, it's still really a demand. I feel like it really sets the tone for my household the way I ask or I set that request out.
It doesn't mean that it's negotiable. Right. Like you're not saying, would you like to take a bath? Right. Because we've all accidentally done that. And they're like, no.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, no, wait. Not really interested.
No, and, but you can still say with courtesy. I love that word courtesy too. I think courtesy is another, when you're distinguishing etiquette versus manners, like treating someone with courtesy is sort of like what you're saying. It's the way you treat someone. It's not just following a rule book. And I think you can be courteous even to the people who are around you all the time.
Yeah.
When you say, can you please put your shoes away? It's not negotiable, but it is still, you know, courteous.
Yes, absolutely. And so for me, things are often phrased in a, I need you to please, you know, and so it's, you know, it's my need. I really need you to do this. I'm going to put a please on the end because I want to acknowledge that you're a human being with your own thoughts and feelings about this. However, I still need for this to get done. So that's one of the things. Sorry, I got my dog barking like crazy in the background.
All good.
So another one is the way the kids treat each other, and they're not allowed to name call. That's always been a big thing. And that was definitely a thing that was passed down from my mom. You're not allowed to, there's certain words that are just off limits, and it's not even the words themselves, it's the tone.
Yes, absolutely.
With which they're used.
Yes.
So those kinds of things in our house. Another thing I think is a sign of manners, although I'm not sure if it's a sign of etiquette, is that we can be very accommodating of other people in a way that even sometimes if another family or person breaches etiquette, which I know I probably do all the time, I still want to accommodate those people. So a perfect example is I know people get really grumpy about people not RSVPing to parties. I get it because it's happened to me a million times. And yet I feel like if that happened, it's my job. Like if someone shows up at a party I didn't expect, it's still my job to treat them just like I would treat anybody else who showed up and to have maybe even to plan ahead for that probability. Because it's just making people, you know, you never know what's going on in someone else's life and making someone else feel welcomed and accepted and like I want them there just as much as I want anyone else there, I feel like is a big part of manners.
I love that. Or another kind of extension of that is treating somebody with courtesy who has been rude to you.
Yes.
That's one that, so we have, I'm already have a side story. We have a library, the people at our public library, I have to say, are very rude. And I don't know if it's that they're just grumpy government employees in a relatively small town suburb, but there's one man in particular who treats basically every kid as if they are like a nuisance in the children's section of the public library for children. And I've encountered a little bit of a trigger for me is people assuming that your kids are rowdy before they've been rowdy. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's one thing to get the side eye if your kids are running around screaming in the library, but if you've done a pretty good job of having your kids be well behaved in a library within reasonable expectations, then for some reason it's a trigger for me for that someone should treat them like they're doing something wrong.
Right.
And I have been so close to wanting to just be rude to this guy back because he's like this to everybody. And we had a good conversation about that, about, you know, being kind to people even when they aren't kind to you. And I don't mean like full on abuse or bullying, but when somebody has not found it to be polite or courteous to you, that you can still extend basic courtesy to them. So I think that might is that kind of related to what you're saying?
Yeah. Too? Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, it's being treated the way you'd want to be treated even when someone's not reciprocating or treating you in that way. And I do think that that's a big part of manners. I think some of the rule book stuff is set up to give us a guideline or just so we all kind of know what's expected, because I do think that that makes life a little easier for everyone sometimes. But it is easy to get caught in those rules, and life is changing really fast.
Yep.
Sarah, we're welcoming our sponsor, Element. That's spelled L-M-N-T, a zero-sugar electrolyte drink that leans on current science about what our bodies really need in order to deliver the most effective hydration possible. You know, Sarah, Eric is really into keeping up with health research, and he's been insisting to me for years that we actually need more salt to stay hydrated. Turns out Element agrees because they've developed their product based on a growing body of research that shows that for optimal health outcomes, we actually need to be taking in sodium levels at 2 to 3 times government recommendations. That's a big difference.
Yeah, it really is, Megan. And, you know, electrolyte deficiency or imbalances can cause headaches, cramps, fatigue, brain fog, and weakness. I know I can feel really rotten when I'm dehydrated. And also, I don't love the taste of plain water, so I'm not that great about drinking it. Element makes a huge difference in how much I'm enjoying my hydration and in how I feel, and it's super easy to fit it into my daily routine. My favorite flavor of Element is the grapefruit, but if that's not for you, we're going to get you set up with a variety pack so you can find your favorite Element flavor. Plus, Element has a no questions asked refund policy. You don't even have to send the product back to get your refund.
Yeah, you can receive a free Element sample pack containing 1 packet of 8 flavors. So you'll get 8 total packets free with any order when you purchase through our custom URL. That's drinkelement.com/momhour, DRINKLMNT/momhour. This offer is available exclusively through our partnership, and it's available for both new and returning customers. To get that offer, again, go to drinkelement.com/momhour.
Okay, Megan, like many of our listeners, I'm sure, I've been doing some spring cleaning in my closet lately, and it always feels so good to get rid of clothes I'm not wearing, things that don't fit or that aren't my style anymore. But you know what I realized? All of my Vionic shoes are always in the keep pile. They just tick all the boxes. They're cute, comfy, high quality, they last forever, and I love growing my Vionic collection, especially with the latest styles from their Vionic Vitals collection.
The Vionic Vitals collection offers daily wear styles designed for elegance, comfort, and versatility. We both love the Uptown Loafer, which collapses flat, so it's perfect for travel. The Chardonnay Heeled Sandal, which I know you love, Sarah. The Walk 23 Classic Sneaker, which our team member Katie gets compliments on all the time. And the Willa Slip-On Flat, one of my favorites, which comes in 12 colors for any outfit.
Yeah, I need to get the Willa Slip-On Flat. That's next on my list. Well, listeners, if you're ready to try the shoes we're always raving about, use code THEMOMHOUR15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at vionicshoes.com when you log into your account. That's one-time use only. Vionic Shoes, wearable well-being for your feet.
So here's an example. The other day, William told me he's never mailed a letter before. And he's 11 years old. And I was horrified because by the time I was, you know, 6, I had been addressing letters and taking them to the mailbox with my mom. And it's not that he's never written a letter. It's just it's so much more rare in our house that a physical letter is written that I don't even always have stamps on hand. I might have to take it from him and go find an envelope. So I've always handled that process. And I felt really guilty about that. And then I thought, well, you know, but we communicate so much more informally. Party invitations are in hand or online. And thank you notes are often just handed out in person. We're not as big of sticklers about thank you notes, especially if it's a gift that was given in person. And there was a thank you given or a phone thank you that often we do it over the phone. Things are becoming, I guess, a little less formal. And in a way, I want to be nostalgic and say, oh, I wish we were back to the times when everything had to be done through the postal system. But it's not real. And I don't know that I actually would want that. I would like to handwrite more letters. Not that that's necessarily etiquette, but it just seems like one of those nice things. It's falling by the wayside. But at the same time, I want it to be kind of on my own terms. And so that's something I've like willingly sort of just let slip without even really noticing it.
I agree. And I think if we go back to like teaching kids, I think if you had to choose, then teaching basic courtesy, like we're talking about, is a little more relevant. It's timeless, Treating people with courtesy is timeless, whereas some of these other things, like you say, are in and out of fashion. And it doesn't mean that it's not something to strive for, but if you're going to have your kind of baseline knowledge, it seems like it's more applicable to kind of know how to interact in social situations and how to treat people and all of that, rather than some of the other rules.
So I do have a couple of other ones that I thought of while you were talking. So, you know, it's so funny how the things that were really big for us growing up or our parents growing up, some of those just really do stay with you. So sometimes when something's a big deal to me and I look around, it doesn't seem to be a big deal to another parent. I think it must be because of what my mom or dad really believed and really taught us. But so I was just thinking about, you know, the whole RSVPing thing, which I know is a super hot topic. And I guess all I want to say about that is I totally think that we should all be RSVPing. And I also believe that we're all human and everybody gets a lot of invitations and a lot of expectations and details. And sometimes things slip. And I hope I try to be the kind of person who allows for that. That's all I'll say about that because I know it's not something that I really want to get into controversy about. Because it is very, it's one of those things people get really super irate about. But one thing that kind of relates to that, I do think, is some and something that definitely is a big deal in my house, is that if you've made a commitment to somebody, you're in. So if you've said you're going to be there, you're going to be there. And that, I, you know, whether it's showing up for a practice or you told your friend you were going to their house, you can get a better offer. That doesn't mean you get to bail.
Oh, I like that.
On the first friend.
I like that. My kids aren't making their own social plans as much yet. So I don't think, but that I really like that. That's great.
So that's one thing. And related to the friends thing, it's, I thought of something else that, oh my gosh, is a huge trigger for me is when, now this is something that I don't know if it's a kid's personality thing or how they're raised, but my mom used to hate it when my friends would come over and I would ask if like they could spend the night or whatever. My mom would say no. And then my friend would be sitting there like going, well, ask her like blah, blah, blah. Like, you know what I mean? trying to get one over on my mom. My mom would get so mad she would send the other kid home. So now that's a huge thing for me. Like if I hear another kid trying to like plot with my kid to get them to go, like to circumvent my rule, I'm like, you're out. Nope. That does not fly in this house. And it's so funny. It's like, it's etiquette, I guess. It's the way you treat authority figures, I guess. You know, I was never allowed to go look through people's fridges unless I'd been given explicit permission. But there are kids who will come over and go right to my fridge and start going through it. Yeah. And I stand there with my mouth dropped open. It's like I have this kind of ragey response to it. And I have to kind of rein that in because, again, like in some houses, it's open door. In our house, it is open season, but only after I've said it's open season.
Right, right.
And it's different if it's house guests who are staying for the weekend and if it's just some kid I have never met.
Right. Totally.
Who just wandered in off the street. So the last one I'll say about, which is a non-negotiable for me, probably because of my mom, was that we were never allowed to appear to or actually invite ourselves over to someone else's house.
Interesting.
And that's a tricky one with kids because sometimes you want the invitation and kids don't care. So they're all like, hey, ask your mom if I can – whatever. Right. And, you know, so one of my kids will say, can I call my friend Brayden and ask if I can spend the night at his house? I was like, you can't do that. I mean, you can call him and see what he's up to. And if his mom invites you, great. Or if we have a discussion about you guys getting together and it comes down to whose house is going to be the house, that's fine too. But you can't just call and ask to stay over.
Right.
I'm sorry, son. I don't want you putting people on the spot and it's rude. But sometimes it's like, so, you know, they'll say, but why is that rude? And this other thing isn't. And I can't, I can't even really say. It's just,
no, I
do you have any of those?
I'm loving all of these because I'm just realizing how just the bit of age difference between our kids is that so many of these in terms of, social stuff is not come up for us yet. Although I will say
it's going to start really soon though with Allegra.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. And we're, you know, I've talked about our neighborhood. So the kids are getting more independent about going to each other's houses. But the difference is as moms, we're still very much involved in the planning, you know, so they're not making their own plans yet. But, one of the things that I had on the list to discuss was being what it means to be a guest and what it means to be a host. And I will say I talk to my kids a lot about that. When we are at somebody's house, what does it mean when you're the guest? You know, and we haven't gone so far as like, don't open the fridge because that, you know, my kids are just young enough that they wouldn't do that yet. But I love that you're just giving me things to think about to kind of expand on that topic. So I've always made a big deal about what it means to be a guest and also what it means to be a host and little things for little kids, you know, like when you go to somebody's house, we always find one of the hosts to say thank you before we leave. Even if it's like a casual play date, I just say, go find a host and they know they can find any kid. Like it could be like a 3-year-old who lives in the house and just say, thank you for having me over or whatever.
Yeah, it's the principle of the thing at that point. It's like acknowledging, you know, that they put you up, that they, you know,
Right. And we have fun with it. When we're the host, even if it's like casual, like my family, you know, they can help offer, you know, what does everybody want to drink or what, you know, to help make guests comfortable. So I mean, we're not to so many of the situations you've talked about, but I do that, like that idea of starting early with what are, and it's different for everybody. Your, you know, things might be different than mine, but what does it mean to be a courteous guest and what does it mean to be a courteous host? Because those situations will come up until infinity.
Yeah, they will. So this is something that I find really, and actually just wrote a post about being a good host this week
that
we can link to in the show notes as well. And it was part of the Kimberly Clark partnership. But the, I feel like it depends a lot, first of all, on the context. So there are homes that we're invited to that's where it's casual. Like if I go to Jenna's, my sister-in-law and my brother, John's house, we walk in, we don't even knock on the door. That's our, we have an open door policy. We might kind of bust it open a little bit and go knock, knock, but we don't knock. Right. It's never, when we first started all hanging out regularly and lived in the same town, moved to the same town, we all had little babies and you didn't knock because that might make a dog bark. And if a dog barks, a baby might wake up from a nap. And then it just kind of became this, you know, we just walk into each other's houses. It's kind of like our second house. That's very different, obviously, from a friend from school or somebody that you don't know as well. So some of it's context, but that also, it also extends to things like, okay, if you're at a party, and this is something that sometimes I struggle with a little bit because I don't always know exactly what the polite thing to do is depending on who the person is. Say you're at a person's house and it's not really like a dinner event or like, you know, snacks and stuff aren't really part of it and your kid is hungry and is sitting there doing that thing where they're standing next to your chair whispering, "Mom, I'm hungry, Mom, I'm hungry." So, you know, it's kind of like part of me thinks it's rude to ask, you know, if, but I know that I would always want to know if somebody in my house was uncomfortable in any way. I'd want to know so that I can help them, And so I can feed them. And maybe I just haven't thought to put the cheese and crackers out yet or whatever. And then that will remind me. So I sort of err toward, you know, me being the one to then say, okay, let me talk to the host. Because I don't want my daughter blurting out in front of all these other kids like, can I have a juice box? And then it turns out they only have three. So I might say something like, were you planning on putting out snacks? I mean, I feel like that gives me a little bit of control over the way it's asked so you don't have a kid kind of getting up in the host's face. But in some houses, it's just no big deal. And I might say to Clara, hey, just ask, you know, to my other good friend Missy if she's putting out snacks or not. Or, you know, or I maybe brought something. Is it okay for me to put it out? So that's kind of like being a guest. One of the things I feel like you take the cues from your host, but you don't always assume that they know exactly what you need. Sometimes you have to tell them. And that's I really appreciate when my guests tell me what they need because I don't always know and I want everyone to be comfortable. So then what does that mean about being a host? So we host a lot, but we are very informal hosts. And one of the thing I wrote about in the post was kind of what I feel like are the essentials to being a good host. And for us, it's things like making sure everybody, especially if they're overnight guests, like making sure people have a modicum of personal space. And in our house, that might mean that they have, you know, usually what that means is our kids will clear out of a bedroom and give the guest a bedroom. And our kids are just expected to just go along with that. I don't want to
I like that part of your post.
I don't want to hear any guff about it.
That's how we are too.
It's just part of what you do when you're in a family and when you have friends. And it's an important thing for us. So, you know, nobody likes to give up their space, but it's not permanent. And if it means making somebody else more comfortable, then you do it. And luckily, none of our kids complain. But I have to say, all of our kids have also gotten used to sharing space because we've had a lot of them, and they've always been required to. So I think it's just never really been that big of a deal in our family. Whereas a kid who's always had his own bedroom, maybe that might be a bigger deal. So that's definitely something that's a consideration. But just those little things that make people comfortable, like making sure there's toilet paper in the bathroom. Because who wants to come out and say, I just used up the last year toilet paper. Nobody wants to have to be that person. Or worse yet, you're in there and you're like, there's no toilet paper. Making sure there's hand soap, hand towels, things like that. I just feel like are the little things. Everything else, you know, the centerpieces and the and the fancy food
and the kids will pick up, like we've talked about with other things. It's sort of like the cumulative memories that the kids will have about how you were. And you're right that being laid back and being welcoming is probably the most important quote unquote manners or etiquette lesson that they're going to pick up. You know, and then maybe some little things like offering, you know, having the snacks out or having the, you know, the towels folded and all of that. And I think including them in those chores, I feel like that's one area where I already delegate is when we're getting ready for guests, you know. I mean, Allegra's sort of like nurturing and domestic, so she likes things like, you know, her room's the one that she gets booted because it's the guest room. Right. So she likes it, like just wiping down the surfaces and folding the towels for the guest. And so, you know, more than anything else, it's probably those little things that they'll remember. And then just the vibe of, you know, having...
Because then they get the idea that having people over is an important part of our lives, and it matters to us how it's done. It's funny because I've had Clara now. Clara is, I mean, we've talked about how our kids are around other people and how they call us out. She is like the truth teller. So I've just realized that like she talks all the time, and she talks to strangers and she talks to everybody. She'll talk their ear off, and she just always wants content, like conversational content. So she uses everything. Right. And so she has no filter at all. Not that she needs when it's six, but it's just funny because someone will come over and she'll say, "We cleaned the whole house just for you."
Yeah.
And they kind of look at me and I'm like, okay, you know, I mean, you know how it is when you have company, it's the best time to get stuff done in your house because it's like, oh my gosh, clean the house.
There's no fooling anyone that the house looks like this.
Exactly.
All the time.
Exactly. And just, it's funny, but I like it too, because it's like, she recognizes, and the kids will sometimes see me madly clean. They're like, oh, who's coming over? Yeah. And they know that that's a big thing. And even like our older kids, who don't have the benefit of getting to really hang out with the younger kids, the kids of our friends, because we had kids before most of our friends and most people our age. So our 15 and 17 year olds are always kind of the older kids now lurking about. So they don't always even get the benefit of having similar aged kids to hang out with just because we happen to be having a get together. But even they find a way to kind of enjoy it. Like they, I think, enjoy kind of watching us get together with our friends and be loud and goofy and all that kind of stuff. And they'll make little funny remarks and they'll walk in and kind of roll their eyes at us and stuff. But they get it. They like, they see why hosting people and having family and friends involved in your life is important and what you have to do to make them feel welcome.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. All right. I would love to switch gears if you're good with that.
I'm up for
and
that.
Talk about, so I want to talk about table manners. At
oh God.
Cause I want to know what dinner at your family's house is like, and I don't mean like a fancy dinner where everybody's supposed to be like mind their P's and Q's. I mean, like, how are you teaching even just simple table manners, not perfection, with a variety of kids' ages? Because I feel like I'm talking specifics. Like, I want to know, do you guys put dishes on the table and say, please pass that? Because I'm still, for the most part, like setting up plates for at least one or two of the kids ahead of time, because it's just easier for me to cut things up and stuff. Yeah. So like, I'm very curious what like an actual weeknight dinner looks like from a manners perspective. Are you guys, you know, if you were all, I know not every night you can sit down at the same time, but if you were, is there please pass the, are there napkins in your lap? Are there rules?
So, okay.
For real.
I'm going to be for realsies on this one. I would love to say that we had really great table manners in my family, because that's one of those things that when I was talking earlier about the things that I thought would be really important to me, that didn't somehow translate as well as I would have hoped. Table manners is one. And I think honestly, it's because we always had a baby or a toddler who had to be dealt with while the older kids were just kind of in a lot of ways fending for themselves.
That's what I want to know.
Well, so here's what happens. The good news is even older dogs can be taught. So my teenagers know if we're at a restaurant, the napkin goes in your lap. You know, they know how to eat with their mouths closed. Mm-hmm. They know how to not scrape the food off with their teeth. Although if my husband could learn that, that would be awesome. That's like one of those ugh, pet peeves. They know, you know, how to ask politely and not to reach. I mean, they know how to do all that stuff. And they'll do it when we're out and about. But when we're sitting at home, sometimes it is a little bit like a zoo. And I mean, I have to tell my oldest son not to eat with his hands. He knows how to use utensils. He just likes, like, he likes to eat peas with his hands. I don't know. And I'm like, Jacob, that's so disgusting. What are you doing? You know, are we, you know, and I say all the classic stuff, like, were you born in a barn?
Right.
And, you know, it's just, it can go a little feral.
Yes.
Around our dinner table on a typical
Tuesday
night.
That's really encouraging to hear, actually. And probably
so
not
good.
Just for me.
Well, I'm glad, because for me it was a big bummer for a long time. And I think I finally just kind of got over it and thought, Does this matter when we're all just being ourselves and we're at our houses? I mean, does it matter that there's, you know, crumpled up napkins next to each kid, or if they're sharing napkins? Like sometimes like only one will bother to get one. And we usually use cloth napkins.
Yeah.
So like there'll be one in the middle of the table and the kid will grab it and then like another kid will snatch it from them. And I'm just kind of sitting there just looking up and thinking, we're all here together. We're all here together. What matters? What matters? And it matters more that we're, that nobody takes the last helping.
Right.
Without checking, which our kids are really good at. So they're really good at stuff like...
But that's a good example. Yeah. Like, again, we haven't even started really serving family style because I'm still... I'm not making separate meals. Like you've talked about this, is like if you have a picky eater or a younger eater, you're just sort of like modifying everything.
Exactly.
And I'm so good at it at this point that I just know... And my husband knows, like, if there's two plates with ketchup on it and one plate with not, we know who likes ketchup. You know, you're just sort of, like, prepping everything so that you have any hope of sitting down at the same time for 5 minutes, you know? So, but I you know, I do think ahead to those next phases. And I, you know, we had some, like, pretty well-established table rules when I was growing up. And my parents weren't really... very old-fashioned about a lot of different manners or etiquette, but I feel like table manners had pretty high expectations, and I probably remember that because I'm the oldest. So I was always, I mean, they were still reminding younger ones, so I had the benefit of all those years of hearing the rules, but we were like, no elbows on the table, no leaning back in your chair, napkin on your lap. Those were like some of the big ones. We always asked to be excused, and my kids do that actually, and that's kind of like a really old-fashioned thing, but they just say, I mean, they just like, it's like, they don't even think about it. Maybe excuse, please, you know, but we did that growing up. So it's kind of funny because that's kind of a one area where I feel like my parents were not strict isn't the right word, but had some maybe traditional expectations, whereas in other areas, I don't think they did. But
well, and it's so funny how, you know, I think it just goes to show you that there really is no right or wrong. We all do things a little bit differently. And it a lot of times depends on our family of origin and then also our husband or, you know, our wife or spouse's family of origin. So, and it can become kind of a mashup, and then we have to take it and make our own twist on it. And sometimes you got to do what you got to do to get through the day, right? And I think that a lot of doing what I had to do to get through the day when we had five small children has now spilled over into this kind of frenzied dinner thing. And so what I've chosen to focus on for most of the kids, and I don't want to make it sound like they're just animals. It's just a little less sometimes formal than I would like. I think what the ones that I've chosen to really focus in on are the ones that apply all the time. And that's, you don't say yuck when someone serves you something because that would make someone else feel bad. You don't, you know, you don't leave the table without finishing the conversation and checking with your parents, whether that's, can I be excused or can I get up or can I walk away from the table now? You don't make fun of each other at the table. You don't. The same things apply. And just like with not taking the last helping, it's because it's something that might matter to somebody else. So let's make sure we take a reasonable helping. And, you know, that's not to say I don't have to remind the kids about those things sometimes, but those are ones that I think have been pretty consistent. It's just things like using, you know, let alone the correct utensil. Let's just use a utensil, for goodness sakes. You know, stuff like that, I think, is a little rougher in our house than I would like. And it's something that we're slowly working on. And I know the kids can do it because when we go to a relative's house or a restaurant, they do it. They know what good manners in an etiquette sense
look like. So you're probably even doing those little reminders more than you think. Or it's just been ingrained in the expectations that you set and the examples that you set.
They hear me. They just don't always, you know, it's going in one ear and out the other, but a little part of it does stick in their heads, and they hear it, and they know. I mean, they don't know what I want. They, by the time a kid's 17, 18 years old, they've, they know, they've been around the block enough times to know that, you know, no parent wants them sitting there chowing with their mouths open. And I'll hear them correct each other. It was actually funny yesterday. I heard Owen saying to William, would you just stop? You know, it was, they were just having a snack.
Right.
And he said, would you stop chewing with your mouth open, please? And William's like, you know, William said, what? I wasn't. And Owen said, well, at school now we're playing the, a game, like how long can you chew with your mouth closed? I'm not sure who started that little game around the cafeteria table, but whoever that person was, I thank them.
Yes, they're keeping each other in check.
Sarah, our sponsor Hiya Health makes a kid's daily multivitamin that parents can feel great about giving their kids because they have no added sugars or dyes. And our kids who have tried Hiya vitamins have loved them, which is important, right? Because what good is a bottle of vitamins that your kid won't take?
Hiya was founded by two dads who didn't like the ingredients label on some of the popular children's vitamins they were seeing on store shelves, so they got to work developing a formula that would help fill the most common nutrient gaps in modern kids' diets. Hiya's chewable kids vitamin is made with a blend of 12 organic fruits and vegetables and then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals. They're also vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, and nut-free.
Hiya manufactures their vitamins right here in the USA with globally sourced ingredients, and then they ship their chewable vitamins directly to your door on a pediatrician-recommended schedule. We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. You're going to get 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, go to hiyahealth.com/momhour. This deal is not available on their regular website. Go to hiyahealth.com/momhour and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
We are welcoming back Ritual as a sponsor today. Megan, we both try to make healthy choices, but you know, sometimes it's tricky to sort through fact and fiction when it comes to supplements and vitamins to figure out just what they're doing for us. That's why I'm glad Ritual keeps studying their products and sharing the results, especially as it relates to women, since women are the focus of all Ritual's products, including the Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin.
And the results are super reassuring. Just as an example, Ritual conducted a university-led clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin, and it was shown to increase vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin is made with high-quality and traceable key nutrients in clean, bioavailable forms with 9 key nutrients in 2 capsules per day. Plus, they are leading the industry when it comes to sustainability. They use lower carbon packaging and prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients. That kind of thoughtfulness really matters to me.
No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/themomhour. Start Ritual or add the Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/themomhour for 25% off.
And, you know, it's totally takes probably longer than we think. I'm thinking of like, you know, you have certain expectations of what like a 6, 7, 8 year old can do. That doesn't mean they're going to do it all the time or even a 15, 16, 17.
Totally right.
So I feel like maybe one of the lessons is not to judge yourself on any one behavior at any one meal, but just like everything else, stay the course.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's funny how you mentioned, you know, your parents' kind of formality about dinner growing up. When I was growing up, we always had dinner at the same time every night, very much like you sat till everyone was done. You know, it was not super formal, but it was definitely
there were
formal.
Standards.
There was some standards, yeah. And I think we were either not a put your napkin in your lap family, or else I just somehow missed that. Like, didn't
maybe
notice it.
Maybe because you're the youngest.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah, very possible.
There was always someone to wipe your face.
Exactly. You know what? I bet you my napkin was always wadded up next to my plate, just waiting for someone to wipe my face. And I was a super messy eater when I was a kid, too, like terribly messy. I wore a bib until I was 5. Like one of those bibs with the big thing on the bottom that catches, like the hard plastic ones that catch the food as it falls.
Yeah,
I had to wear that. There's pictures of me at 5 years old wearing that bib. I remember my mom kind of shaking her head and saying, I can't believe I have to put this on you, but it's spaghetti night. So... I'm not that bad anymore, but I still make a lot of mess with crumbs. I think it wasn't until I went to the prom at, you know, 16 or whatever, and sat down and noticed that everybody around me at this restaurant had their napkins in their lap. And suddenly I was like, wait, was I supposed to be doing this all along? And I just somehow missed the memo. And ever since then, yeah, I put my napkin in my lap every single time. But up until that moment, it was like, everyone in the world knew something that I didn't know. It was actually kind of a strange moment for me. So I think sometimes no matter what you do and how closely you think you're paying attention and how many times you say something, it doesn't click until it clicks.
Right. Oh, yeah, man. Well, okay, so that's a great that's a great segue into. I'm going to tell you a couple other things I want to talk about.
Sure.
And because of time, maybe we can cherry pick. There's not a ton, but I'm so curious about this. So one of the things I want to talk about is how kids learn to interact with adults. And I have a couple. One is sort of respecting your elders and that idea. Calling people Mrs. and Mr. if you do that or if you don't do that. And just not just that, but also how to interact with adults in certain situations, like how to order for themselves at a restaurant or how to like ask an adult a question who they don't know. I think a lot of kids are if they never had practice doing that, like they're petrified of making a phone call or going up and, so kind of that whole genre of teaching them to interact with adults that aren't close friends and family. And then I'd also love to hear your thoughts on raising all the boys that you have and whether you subscribe to or have taught them certain like chivalry, like opening the door, holding the door, or if you don't, or if you have thoughts on that. So that's another place we could go. I think those are the two big areas. So I invite you to jump
in. Let's start with the adult one, because I think that's a really good one. I have to say this is something where I've been a little bit torn and uncertain. I don't like it when people call me Mrs. Anything. First of all, I go by my maiden name professionally and personally, but legally my last name is the same as my kids and also the same as my mother-in-law's. And I don't – to me, she's Mrs. Dodson and I'm Megan.
Right.
I know that that's a very generationally typical feeling to have. It's jarring for me for a kid. Now, they can sometimes call me like – I think it's really cute when someone calls me like Mrs. Owen's mom. I think that's really cute. And also I respect that there are parents who absolutely think it's important for kids to call, you know, other adults ma'am or Mrs. Dodson or whatever. And that's fine. It's not like I'm super bothered by it. It's just not how I would ever introduce myself to someone.
Right.
So I kind of let other parents, you know, take the lead on what they want their kids to call me. And likewise, I will often ask if someone has a preference and often they do. And often it's just like, my preference, you know.
I know. And you kind of have to do that right at the beginning. That's what I found.
Yes, like you do. Source. Otherwise,
I've thought about this way more than the average person. But it is helpful to do that at the beginning. Otherwise, you're they left get used with that like
awkward. And then they get used to calling you something maybe you don't want to be called. Or, you know, they get used to calling the other person something they don't want to be called. So I think it just keeps coming back to courtesy. What is it that somebody else wants to be called? Then call them that. It doesn't have to be about you all the time and what your thoughts and ideas are about the way the world should work. Because guess what? The world doesn't work the way you want it to all the time. And people have different ideas about things.
And that's there's a certain amount of when in Rome, too. And that's good for kids to learn if they are in a more formal situation or around a lot of very like senior, literally like generationally older people.
Yeah.
That it's not a bad idea to give your kids a pep talk. Like at this party, we are going to, you know, just assume that we're going to call people Mr. and Mrs. and I'll introduce them that way. And, you know, even if that's not the way that you normally operate, it's not a bad thing to kind of teach them to take that when in Rome. I mean, that's like back to like cultural manners, you know, in certain cultures, belching is polite after a meal. You know, that's like the classic example.
It's the difference between manners and etiquette, right? It's the difference between it's doing what makes other people at ease and comfortable. And I think it's funny that I don't feel like this was a thing when I was growing up. This must be like a newer, and it often is people with preschool aged kids who will have their kids call me Miss Megan.
Okay, so I have to – this is like – this is a thing for me.
Is this a pet peeve?
It is it's like a phenomenon in my life. So first of all – okay, I have to back up. This is – okay. So I grew up not calling any adults Mr. or Mrs. except our teachers at school. And my brother and sister went to a very progressive private middle school where even the teachers were called by their first name. So – like I just grew up in very laid back Southern California in the 80s. Like it just was not, there were no Miss Sarahs or Miss Megans. That was,
it's a very Southern thing, isn't it?
I think it's Southern, but I think it's spread. So,
It definitely has spread.
The first time I was called Miss Sarah was when I taught dance when I was like in my 20s. And even then I didn't like it. I would just rather be called
Sarah.
Or Mrs. Powers. I would almost rather be called my formal like Mrs. Powers or then Ms. Weisel as it was than Miss Sarah. And even then, but that was a thing in like dance or any of like the preschools, like you said, preschools, dance, the extracurriculars where it was like a halfway sign of respect.
But yes, I think that's very much what it's like.
And I think it's at least here, I feel like it is the norm because maybe because no one does Mr. and Mrs. anymore. So it's like a meet you halfway.
It very much feels like that to me.
It's like
halfway.
So uncomfortable for me. And I basically let my kids call their friends' moms by their first names. No, I'm just going by the assumption that no one's offended because these are like casual relationships. And if it's truly formal, I would prefer that we err on the side of Mr. and Mrs. I don't know why.
Well, you know, I can tell you why for me. First of all, Miss something, and it's always Miss, it's never Ms. Yes. Megan.
Yeah.
Is what I believe in like a traditional Southern culture, you would call a teenage girl.
Right.
Or like a young girl, you'd call, right. You know, if you were, you know, the help.
Right.
Or a servant or someone coming over to court or whatever, it
right.
would be, you know, not even courting. You'd call her by her last name if it was courting. It would be right. like almost like a yes. servant-child relationship.
Right.
And also
just
my
like
family.
Master with the boys, right?
Exactly.
Like Master William and Miss
yes.
Clara. Yeah.
My friends or my family, when I was growing up, especially my Aunt Paula, jokingly called me Miss Megan. And it was kind of like I was the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
And so, oh, here comes Miss Megan. It was sort of like diminutive. It just.
Yeah, I agree.
It wasn't something you call a grown 37-year-old woman.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. And I do feel like it's people trying to be polite and have that honorarium or whatever you would even call the Miss or the Mrs. But not wanting to make the error of calling you by the wrong last name, since a lot
right.
of people use
yes.
their maiden names and you're never
right.
sure if the family right. name fits, and not wanting to be too formal, it's kind of created this mashup. But because of kind of where I know it came from, and I don't think I don't know that a lot of people even necessarily know that. I think I read Gone with the Wind a lot when I was
right.
younger. You know, and because of people called me that when I was growing up, maybe if you didn't know that, it would
right.
seem kind of like a compromise. But to me, it just feels odd. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
And also, I always think of and I know this is unfair, but I think of preschool teachers as being very young.
Yeah. Ours are.
Yeah, like in their early 20s.
Yeah.
And it seems like,
and that's
okay.
And like, that goes back to the dance teacher thing, too. I didn't even
yes.
like it when I was a 23-year-old
right.
dance teacher teaching four-year-olds ballet. I actually didn't even like it then, but that's what it makes me think of.
Yeah, and now I'm like, I'm 37. I am not Miss Megan. However, if – I'm not going to say anything about it. If a kid calls me Miss
no.
Megan –
And
okay.
I think, again, going back to if that's what their moms want them to do,
right.
that's totally
or that's
fine.
What they, probably that's what they learned in preschool. I really
yes.
do think that's where a lot of it comes from. I think kids learn to address teachers that way in preschool, and then the parents hear it and think, you know, we're all looking for a rule sometimes.
Right.
And if that's something
and
you glom
onto,
like, oh, look, these teachers taught my kid to call them Miss, you know, Miss
yeah.
Sarah, so that must mean that's the acceptable way to do it. That's when
right.
how I'm going to have them address people from now
right.
on. I get it. I mean, you know, we're all looking for that, like,
sure.
what does everyone want from us kind of thing sometimes. So it's just, it is funny that we both had the same feelings about that. Sarah,
yeah,
what does this always
yeah.
happen?
And I just, and then I feel like there's a wide gap between the formality of Mr. or Mrs. Powers or Mrs. Dodson
yes.
and a straight up first name. So I, even though the Miss Sarah bugs me, actually sometimes it feels like safe because it feels very familiar for little kids to call another adult by their first name, especially early in the relationship.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like as a society, we need like a new plan, man.
We
but
do.
I will, to wrap up on this topic, I will just exactly like your napkin in the lap, like the exact same scenario, only this is me going to college in the Midwest where there's a bunch of not just Midwesterners, but a lot of New Yorkers and like Northeast and New England kids and meeting my New Jersey roommates' parents for the first time and full on calling them Neil and Judy without even thinking.
Oh,
like
yeah.
without, like you said, like not even thinking that it was a problem. And they're wonderful and were not offended, but they were surprised.
Right.
Like this California.
They're like, who is this California kid?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And then hearing, you know, picking up soon after that was maybe not, that was a little presumptuous. Like I could have at least
yeah.
asked or at least like tried to
right.
do the other and then had them invite me to call them by their first name. But that same exact moment. And
yeah,
I
you
like,
don't know until you know. And so,
right.
you know, part of it is figuring things out through blundering, you
right.
know? So,
right.
Which we have a few minutes still, right?
Oh, yeah. I was,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, I wanted to address the next thing that kind of ties in with that, which you were talking about is teaching kids to interact with adults.
Yes,
and this
I
is
like
something.
This
yeah, this is something where I've been pretty adamant about I don't want to have the kid who can't make eye contact.
Yes.
And
I think you and I are like 100% on the same page on this
yeah.
one.
So I've found little ways, and a lot of this depends, you know, on your circumstances and where you live and your kids' ages. But when Jacob and Isaac were, I want to say they were like 6 and 8 the first time we did this, we just gave them $5 and sent them down to the gas station
mm-hmm.
to buy something. And it was funny because they came back and you could just see their personalities already playing out. Jacob handed me back the $5 and he had candy. And I said, well, where'd you get that from? And he said, this guy in line bought it for me. And I said, well, why? And he said, I don't know. I was just talking to him. And I guess he just thought maybe I didn't have money or he thought I was cute or something. So he paid for my candy. And I was like, okay. And then, you know, Isaac was like his sidekick who said nothing. It was hilarious. It was like their personalities could not, right. You know, Jacob's always the one right. who's somehow figuring out the workaround or getting right. people to do stuff for him.
Right.
He's and an Isaac, yeah. you know, he has the $5 bill. If he had been by himself, he would have walked in. He would have said hi to the guy, given right. him the money and walked out. I mean, it wouldn't have been, but it was so funny. And that has played out. Like Jacob will come home with buckets full of chicken sometimes that he didn't pay for. I'm like, how did you get that chicken? He's like, oh, I don't know. The lady at the you know corner store said it was like she was about to get rid of it, so she just gave me this bucket of chicken. It's like, how come you're always in the right place? And we do have a corner store where they sell chicken, but I don't know if that's a common thing. But I guess they're all very in their own ways, which is completely related to their own personalities, really comfortable with adults. And they've just been
yes.
surrounded by adults, and I've always expected them to deal with stuff themselves. I'm not going to go up, you know, and help you figure this out. Like, I'm not going to be the parent, you know, with little kids is one thing.
Right.
But like, would you ever go to Chuck E. Cheese or a place like that?
Right.
Where they have to like turn in their tokens or they right. have to turn in their right. tickets and get the prize. Right. Why right. would I want to be involved in that terrible process?
Right.
It's torture.
It is one of the most terrible processes.
So I might help them a little ahead of time just because I feel sorry for the guy up there who has to explain right. very patiently over and right. over why, you know.
How many tickets?
For five tickets, you can get it. Yeah. You can get a Tootsie Roll for five yeah. tickets. Nope, yeah. you can't get the stuffed bear. That would yeah. be 500. So I might guide them and say, here's what you can get for this. Now take these up, hand them mm-hmm. to the man, and this is what you're going to do. And you have to guide them through that. But
sure.
But they, at a much younger age than I think a lot of parents assume, they can handle it.
Yes.
And they might screw up. But
yeah, right, exactly. Well, that was my point is that yeah. they need the practice. So that's a great time to do it is at Chuck E. Cheese. Or like letting kids – we let our kids order at restaurant, casual restaurants for themselves literally from when they can talk. And yeah. if they get shy and don't want to, then that's obviously not a big deal. But if the person can't understand them, we'll help right. repeat. But really, we don't order for our kids after they're like two. You know, we yeah. show them what the options are and kind of have them ready so they're not like, you know, so they yeah. know what they yeah. want. And then, but little bits of practice like that over time add up because you see older kids who are very uncomfortable in those kinds of adult interactions.
And the other thing is, I think when you let them do stuff like that, you learn like where they could use a little support.
Right.
So like for another example that has to do with Isaac, he's a shy kid and mm-hmm. if you know him, he'll talk your ear off. But if right. you don't know him, he can be a little awkward and he doesn't say a lot. And so we figured out pretty early on when he was like four or five that he's a mumbler. Mm-hmm. If you're at a restaurant, mm-hmm. he's the one who's kind of like looking down.
Right.
Rah, rah, rah.
Right.
And so we had to really work with him to say, you know, look up, like make eye contact with the
right.
guy. This is kind of funny. If you have to be part of our family sometimes to understand the humor, but like we would call him like cheese hands because if you went to give him a like a handshake, it would be sort of this like limp, sort of, you know, damp, cheesy. This is the only way. It was like shaking hands with a piece of like American cheese, but like the singles, you know, like the
yes, yes. singles. The weirdest.
And so we had to kind of teach him. We're like, hey, old cheese hands, like we got to teach you how to do a real handshake because that's something you have to learn how to do at some point. And you have to look up and look at someone's eyes and
yes.
talk
well,
to them.
Those two things are things I specifically remember being taught and being like reminded of going into a situation like, let's remember how we shake hands and make eye contact. And that's, you know, I feel like that is one that I remember and that it does have to be taught and it has to
yeah.
be taught. You know, you're not going to, I hope, not going to criticize your child in the moment while they're meeting someone. So it's got to be a little, it's always got to be beforehand or after, mm. like, hey, let's practice that handshake.
Yeah.
But I think it is, it's not necessarily, like some of the things we're talking about, it might be acquired through sort of overall environment and peer pressure, like a napkin in your lap. But I think some of these are really probably better off taught, don't you
yeah.
think? Like
oh,
that
yeah.
Because there are adults with very weak handshakes and
yes,
who are
there
awkward,
are.
You know? And yes. like, I am actually very glad that I learned how to
Me too. Me too. Because
I
wonder sometimes if they know. Do they know that it's really uncomfortable to shake their cheesy hands? I don't know.
That's probably a good distinction where some of these will just, most kids will pick up on them just by being around them, but some do
They require some guidance. And sometimes it can go, I have to say, like, sometimes the comfort level with adults can become too comfortable. So, like, William, who's 11 now, he's so comfortable with adults. I sometimes have to say to him, you know, honey, that you're coming off as a smart aleck. I know that's not your intention, because right. it's really right. not. He's a very sweet kid. But, like, right. you're so dry and so right. – sometimes he's so deadpan
right.
that he kind of comes off as a jerk to adults. And I have to say, you know, like, hey – I know that's funny when we're all in our house. Your right. sarcasm is hilarious. We all laugh at you all the time. Right. So, of course, he feeds on that and thinks he can just do it anywhere. And it's like, but it's not time to do that when you're in line with the cashier. Right. She doesn't, you know, just respond like a polite human being, even if it's boring.
Right.
Save your sarcastic yeah. comebacks for your brothers. That's what yeah. we're here. They're here for.
And that's so, you know, and that's yeah. age appropriate. It's so interesting how all of this is sort of like different at different stages. Yeah. You know, that wouldn't be an issue. It's such like you have to start with the basic level, yes. like level one, and then those are much more subtle things, but things that he will be glad to know. You know, yeah. that I think it's good feedback.
Yeah.
This is like a random interjection, but what about interrupting? We have a specific way to deal with interrupting, both in the house and because it's like a pet peeve of mine to be interrupted. And I would imagine with five kids, is it yeah. something that you guys address?
Of course. I think it's something that we address constantly.
Yeah.
I have been known to put my hand over a kid's face
yeah.
when they're constantly, and then I'll, you know, when the other person is done, you know what, here's what I kind of do. And until you just asked this question, I didn't realize I had a strategy for it. But I will block the other person out who's interrupting. And sometimes that means physically, like, covering right. them. And I won't take my eyes away from the person I'm talking to. Like, they get my attention.
Right, right.
And then when they're done, I'll look at the person whose mouth I've been covering and say, I'm sorry that I did that. That was kind of rude. But you were just interrupting. Your brother was talking. You know, you can wait right. 2 seconds.
Right.
They get it. They learn yeah. not to do it that
is,
after
and
a while.
Yes, and some of that is impulse control, right? It just
yeah.
gets better as you get older. But man, it's like a total trigger for me. And I think, again, being the oldest, there were always littler, more impatient people interrupting. Yes. And I just remember like throwing my hands up and being like, I'm not talking. And this is like, yeah. as you know, as a teenager. When Reed started karate when he was really little, like 4, they, you know how in martial arts, they teach them a lot of like, respect and
yes.
sort of like self-discipline skills.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. the one that they did with interrupting really stuck. And it is just, it's not like the only people to teach it this way, but it's called the polite interruption. And the kids just go up and just gently place a hand like on your arm to let you know that they want to say something, and they don't say anything. And I swear my kids do it.
Yeah.
Now, some days they'll stand there so long, like, get your hand off. Like, why are you hanging on me? But if, for listeners out there, if you have little kids who are maybe a little bit more malleable or
yes.
to give them sort of a waiting skill, and then you know, like, you can kind of pat them back or even
you're acknowledging them
to say, yes,
yeah.
I'll be with you in one moment. But I don't know why that one stuck, but it did. And it is nice. And my kids are pretty good about it. Even like in out and about, like other adults will see them come up and just put a hand on my forearm as I'm talking. And they're like, wow. And I'm like,
that's
I can't
a really
take
good
no credit.
Oh, I like it's that.
This Mr. Boggs.
I might try that with Clara because she's the talker and
yeah.
the neediest and the youngest.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
she's the one who just, you know, it's mom, mom, mom.
Right.
And that's one thing if I had to say like a trigger for me, which is also does have to do with manners, is this idea that my kids have, which I'm still trying to train them out of, by the way. This
right.
is not easy stuff. That wherever they are in the house, if they just say my name enough times,
I'll come.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll have one kid in a bedroom, one kid in the living room, one kid in the kitchen. They're all like, mom, mom, mom. And I'll stop whatever I'm doing and say, I'm not going to yell and I'm not coming to you.
Right.
I'm not going to be beckoned. So
yeah.
if you need me, come to me. And I'll hear sometimes the kids correcting each other.
Yeah.
Like, didn't mom just say that
yes.
she's busy and cannot come help you right now? Or, you know, she's not going to come running in, dude. Why don't you go in there? But it's funny when they police each other but don't see it
right.
in themselves.
Right.
And I guess I feel like with stuff like that, the biggest thing that I can do, if I feel like they have an expectation of me that's rude, I just can't give into it. Because once I give into it once
– right.
it's over. You know,
yeah.
once I come running, if they yell my name in another room, of course, if it's like a mom, that's
yeah.
different. Mom, help. But if it's just that mom, mom, and they don't even change, they just kind of escalate
right.
the volume a little
well,
bit.
Well, like Reed will just continue talking like as if I can hear him.
Right.
Like, you know, I'm like, I can't hear you. I'm not. And I say the same thing. I say, what I usually say is, you can either come to me or I will be downstairs in about 5 minutes. So that's your choice. You may come to me or you may wait, but I cannot hear you and I don't want to yell.
Right, exactly. Oh gosh. So is there something else we were like leading into that we didn't
Do you have a 3 minute, have you taught your older boys any sort of old fashioned rules of chivalry, or are you postmodern beyond that? I'm curious. I have no right or wrong judgment.
I haven't taught them anything like that. I feel like as far as like how to treat women, part of me really likes the idea. I like when a door is held for me. Part of me almost cringes at the idea of teaching that to my boys. It does feel a little, I don't know. And I mean, I'm a feminist, but that's not like something that I really like hitch my wagon to. Like, I'm not, you know, that's not a big, huge topic for me. Like chivalry,
right?
I could take it or leave it. I do think that there's a certain thing that the kids observe in the way people behave toward each other. So I will always hold a door open for someone behind me, whether they're a male or female. I don't care.
That's kind
and
of
so it's yeah, not necessarily right. a male female thing. And so I think that the boys are picking up on that. Right. And there's been times before where I'll say, hey, grab that door. There's someone coming, because kids are very self-centered. They don't always notice.
Right.
And I'm always scanning the environment looking for, you know, who needs something that I need that I can fulfill.
I think that's, you hit the nail on the head, which is who would benefit from this door being held open? Is it a mom with a double stroller? Yes. Is it an older person? Is it, you know, a big family who just, it would be helpful to let them all go through at once?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
you're right. It's not necessarily a male female.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of, but I was curious. I did want to bring it up because you have a lot of boys and because, you know, you're raising teenage boys and that is something that it's not like you have to opt in or opt out of that.
Right. No. Yeah.
But,
well, and I think for specifically to like the holding the door open and other little niceties that I can't even really think of an example right now, but when you're out in public, again, it's like if we're at a restaurant, there's sometimes I'll just kind of look at one of my kids and kind of like give them the little nod, and they'll see, they kind of clue into the situation and they'll hold the door for the elderly guy with the walker or whatever.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like if with a little prompting – they're very able to see what's going on around them and then react in a courteous way, which is kind of my goal.
Right.
As far as like them being boys and specifically to like their male-female relationships, the only really thing that I've tried to teach them is the way they talk about girls. And that's something that's really tough, man. The boys get together with their friends. It's not so much when there's just the boys at home.
Right.
But like when they get together with their friends and I kind of just overhear the way they casually – are just rude about girls. And it's not real sexual stuff. It's not really what it is. It's just sort of this condescension or something.
Yeah.
That really is a trigger for me. And so we've talked about that many times. And again, it's like, you hope they're getting it right. I mean, I was a teenager. I said a lot of terrible things too.
Right.
So it's about boys and girls. So, you know, again, I think if we had to kind of put a big bow on this conversation, which I suppose we need to, it's that all
and write
of this.
A thank you note for
It's that all of this is really about what's courteous to other people and really what makes other people feel good. And I think the rest of it is just window dressing.
And I think kind of two themes emerged, which is one is creating the environment where you treat each other courteously in your home, and you have a certain environment in your home that they are exposed to over a long period of time, but that there are a few skills that you might decide are important to you, and those, it may be worth teaching those. So it's not either or. It's not you have to teach your kids this set of rules and then the rest of the time goes out the window. And it's also not that just exposure to the environment may not be enough. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does.
But I think both are important. I think that kind of emerged because I'm thinking of things that I do want to take an active role in sort of teaching or talking about with my kids. But that it's also, even if you never mention the napkin in the lap, you'll get there eventually. You know what I mean? Like, I think both are true.
There is hope. If your house looks a little feral at dinner time right now, there's hope.
I love it. Oh, this is
awesome. We need to wrap up. We want to really quick say you can always go to themomhour.com and find links to how to leave us a rating or review on iTunes. If you want to do that, that would be awesome.
And leave a comment on the show notes.
And leave a comment
for this one if you have feedback, because we've been getting some really awesome comments and we're replying. And so the conversation can continue right there at themomhour.com. You'll find this episode and then leave a comment on that post. Easy. It's easy.
It's very, very easy. So don't be shy. All right. Thanks so much, Sarah. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks,
always.
Megan.
We'll be back in a couple of weeks.
All right.
Sarah, I have been having just the best time making my new podcast, The Teas Made. I launched back in November, and so far I've covered topics like staying warm on cold winter walks, nurturing creativity, how to be a great host, and even Nordic secrets to loving winter.
Well, you know I am fan number one of The Teas Made. It's got such a cozy vibe, and it seems like you've really hit your stride in covering topics like wellness, self-care, comforting rituals and routines, and home and family life.
Just look for The Teas Made with Megan Francis wherever you get your podcasts, or head to theteasmade.com to find all the episodes.
Hey everyone, Sarah here. Megan and I would absolutely love it if you hit pause right now, right where you're listening, and left the Mom Hour a rating and review. If our show has helped you feel a little more confident as a mom or a little less alone, that's one of the absolute biggest ways you can thank us. And it really takes about 30 seconds. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, just navigate to the Mom Hours show listing. So not the episode you're listening to right now, but the kind of landing area for our show as a whole, and then scroll down to leave a rating or review. Thank you so much.